I'm Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway. The journalism industry continues to reckon with its legacy of systemic racism. Earlier this week, Latino journalists at the Los Angeles Times sent an open letter to leadership demanding better newsroom representation. Nearly half of the residents in the Los Angeles region are Latino, but only 13% of the Los Angeles Times newsroom is also Latino. The letter by the LA Times journalists comes just weeks after their Black colleagues also called for similar change at the paper. And the letter also comes at a time when many of the media narratives about Latinos in the United States often focus solely on immigration and not on the broader issues like police brutality and income inequality. I'm joined now by one of the journalists behind the efforts to diversify the LA Times newsroom, Esmeralda Bermudez, a staff writer at the Times focusing on the lives of Latinos. Esmeralda, thanks for joining us.
Gracias for having me. Thank you so much.
Also with us is Graciela Machovsky, the director of the Spanish Language Journalism Program at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism and my alma mater. Graciela, thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Thank you. Esmeralda, tell us why you and your colleagues decided to write the letter beyond the numbers that we just cited at the top.
God, so many reasons. I think, you know, it's important to let you and your audience know that this week was historic for Latinos at the LA Times. It's really the largest, most significant public action we've taken in 139 years since the paper was established. We had more than 80 Latinos in the newsroom come out and say that the LA Times must do better. And here's a list of demands to hold you accountable and also to collaborate with you. And the reason we did it really is because LA's, you know, this huge complex, beautiful place, and it's also a place, as you mentioned, that's half Latino, and writing thoroughly and responsibly about Latinos and having a staff that's representative of our newsroom, it's not only a moral issue, it's about accurate journalism, and it's honestly what makes most financial sense. And, you know, I think any salesman coming to LA to sell, whether it's car insurance or laundry detergent, would know that they have to cater to the Latino market, that they will not survive without Latinos. And we have to commit to doing the same at our paper as storytellers and watchdogs. It's the only way we're going to succeed.
What has management responded to the letter yet? I know it got a lot of traction on social media with the hashtag that you guys created, SoyLAT. But what has management said so far?
We actually had four different hashtags trending throughout California and Los Angeles all day. Our management has offered a wonderful response. We're going to be meeting with them actually later today, and go one by one on our demands. And so we're really looking forward to them listening with intent, and you know, in good faith, really taking immediate action on a number of these items, because it's a critical mission, you know, all around. Over the decades, you know, at our paper and so many newsrooms, really, Latinos have, you know, they've won the Pulitzers, they've done the investigative work, they've covered the fires, the plane crashes, the mass shootings. And we regularly here at our paper write pieces that have national impact. And I think the thing is, our excellence should not be an exception. It really needs to be nurtured and trusted and promoted. And this is kind of our hopefully a new beginning for us in starting that conversation.
Graciela, when you hear about these letters that have been taken, particularly for the first time in the LA Times newsroom among Latinos, we should note that the LA Times investigative staff has zero Latinos on its team right now. Why is it so critical, Graciela, that these newsrooms reflect the wider community, not just in a city like Los Angeles, but cities across the country?
Well, because it has been proven again and again that if newsrooms are full of people who are not in contact with the communities they write or they talk about, they don't cover them well. They don't understand their concerns, their lives. You know, historically, it has been understood the opposite way within newsrooms, that if you are a person of color, you're biased to cover communities of color. And so the consequences of that has been that the white male perspective, which is the majority even today in newsrooms, you know, is made out of men who are white. So that perspective was considered the universal non-biased perspective. And it has been proven again and again that that perspective is very biased and limited. I think it also has to do with an issue of trust. You know, trust in media in this country is very low in the world, but in this country as well. And there's enough data showing that, in particularly among communities of color, mainstream, so-called mainstream media, local mainstream media is not trusted, and is not trusted because they've seen how they've been portrayed by, you know, the stereotyping and or the lack of understanding that with which they've been covered for a very long time. So I think this is the change that has been requested.
We're now also joined by Francis Negron Muntaner, a media scholar and professor at Columbia University. Francis, your department at Columbia studies Latino media in particular and Latino media habits. What do we know about how Latinos are consuming media today and what this call for diversity for more Latinos at the LA Times could possibly mean?
Well, our studies demonstrate that Latinos definitely want to see a much broader range of representation, that they're very aware of the arc and the relationship between stereotyping and media company bottom line. And one of the fascinating things about this problematic is that in our studies, I've suggested that media companies are aware that if they were more diverse, both at the level of decision making and storytelling, and or in the case of newsroom coverage, they would actually make more money. They would actually reach more people. But they don't do it to a large extent because what's on the table really is the power to not only frame the story, but also to influence society to reproduce the conditions of power that they already enjoy and the perspectives that they uphold. So I just wanted to call attention to that because often the conversation is about diversity, inclusion, or climate in institutions. But I think it's important to say that the bottom line of this conversation is power.
Francis, I want to play you a clip from an interview I did with Julian Castro just a couple weeks ago.
If it has to do with immigration, you know, they're all right there. You know, you're getting a lot of coverage. Hey, you know, let's figure out what Latinos have to say about this. But if it deals with something else, whether it's police violence or jobs in the economy or healthcare or technology or you name it, well, that's not really, that's not a Latino issue. They're not going to, they're not going to focus oftentimes on that aspect of that issue with regard to Latinos.
Francis, that's Julian Castro was referring there to media coverage and the narratives that we hear. I'd love to hear your thoughts on his statement right there.
Well, that's absolutely borne by my work. We found repeatedly that in news coverage, in broadcasts, over 62% of stories are often about immigration, crime, not being the victim of police brutality, but being criminals or targeted as criminals. Disasters. That's actually a third major thematic, usually associated with the U.S. territories like Puerto Rico or nations in Latin America. And often those stories about disaster, when they're political disasters, are still covered through what we could call a Cold War lens. So in that sense, you're threatening as criminal, illegal, or undocumented immigrant, or a communist, So yes, absolutely. That's the lens. And what's interesting about that in the long arc of the studies that we have done is that these narratives of what we could call danger at the border have been present in cinema since the invention of motion pictures. And what I found interesting is that that danger at the border thematic that was so crucial to the success of Hollywood in the silent era, it was actually fueling profits for the studios, now lives pretty comfortably in the newsrooms. It's one of the places where that narrative that there's a threat at the border that's going to overwhelm the U.S. in some disastrous way, gets continuously reproduced.
Esmeralda, you are actually doing the work. You're reporting in Los Angeles. When you hear Julian Castro say this, I mean, you're the person that's coming up with ideas, that's going out into the field and actually doing the reporting. Have you found that as a challenge to get past narratives that are limited to immigration? Not to suggest that those stories are not important, but that there needs to be a broader lens when covering Latinos in this country.
Every day. I've been doing this work for about 12 years now at the LA Times, and it's the kind of work that's more nuanced, more layers. It means sitting in Latinos' living rooms on their couches for hours, listening to their lives. And, here in LA, it's such a, especially special place. I mean, Latinos permeate everything about LA. Our schools are close to 80% Latino. 40% of people here speak Spanish in their homes. Nearly 50% of those affected by police violence are Latino. It's really inexcusable that we have so many departments at the LA Times, critical departments like, you know, Campaign 2020, courts, police, crime investigations, Latin America, Washington, D.C., I could go on, that have either zero or only one Latino staffer. And though we do incredible work, especially in these last just couple of years, we've been doing really, really good work across the nation. Absolutely. I love everything that Francis just said. I mean, we're either, you know, holiday props, or they talk about our burritos and our, you know, plátanos. Well, not even about the plátanos, but you know, we're statistical, you know, figures. We're these kind of mysterious kind of shadows, you know, monolithic shadows in society when we're one out of five folks in the U.S. are Latino.
So, Esmeralda, one of the ways, the few ways that Latino journalists around the country convene is through the National Association of Hispanic Journalists. Is it enough for us as Latino journalists? Is the organization enough for us to get this type of representation and everything else that we're looking for?
Wow. You know, that's a big question. It's an important question. I know that when, for example, when I look at the foundation of our paper, and I think this probably rings true for a number of other newspapers, it's really such a deep rooted issue. It goes beyond the hiring, promotion, retention, storytelling. It also goes to, you know, where are we advertising, you know, our newspaper's brand? What events are we holding in the community? What presence do we have in local high schools? What interns are we allowing in the room? And so the gathering of organizations like NHA, you know, those conventions are very meaningful. I mean, that's how I got just about everything, you know, all of my connections and my roles at different papers that I played and have come from that networking that I've done at those conferences. But I feel like, you know, we absolutely have to have other channels so that we can support more of our young aspiring Latino journalists, so that we can talk about marketing research and what do Latinos, what can we do to have Latinos read newspapers and listen to, you know, mainstream radio and also television news. There's so many different places along the pipe where it's broken. And so there does have to be a far more, a 360 view, and that definitely takes a whole lot more than gathering once a year at a conference and having one organization. It's too much for just, you know, one organization to take on.
Graciela, we've been talking about mainstream English-speaking media so far, but Latino media in and of itself are also places that are rife with, obviously they're full of Latinos, but there are other issues that are happening there, namely in terms of the racial lack of diversity and in terms of the sexism that happens there. So how do we, where do those stand today? Places like,
yes,
Univision.
Right. So there was a social media outrage against some of the Spanish language TV coverage of the recent uprisings against police brutality. Many people were seeing anti-blackness and a very conservative coverage with a focus on the little destruction that was happening and not on the overwhelming peacefulness of the protests. So we are actually putting together a committee, and Francis is part of it, in a couple of weeks to create a document with recommendations for Spanish language media on how to cover race stories outside and within the community. So representation, as you said, is a big pending issue in Spanish language media, particularly if you look at the TV shows, Telemundo, Univision, and other local TV shows, you see very few brown and black faces on TV. I believe Ilia Calderon is the only Afro-Latina who is the anchor of a major news show in this country. So we are also going to release in a couple of weeks content analysis we did. We've been analyzing more than 1 million news items from Spanish language media, trying to find the news agenda, trying to find what is the portrayal of women, what are the ways, the words. One thing we found is that also Spanish language media overwhelmingly covers immigration as a story. But in that case, I think it has to do with the fact that most 80% of Latino media in this country is Spanish language media. There's also, you know, English language and bilingual outlets, but the Spanish language media caters the immigrant community almost exclusively. There are very few content in Spanish language TV that is appealing to the younger bilingual, majority bilingual Latino population. And as you know, 2/3 of the Latino population are US born, are young, and are bilingual. So,
and that's been a challenge for a while for US-based media to reach this sort of bilingual, younger Latino audience. But before we go, I want to make sure I ask Esmeralda one more question here, because Esmeralda, we have similar experiences in that as Latinas who are bilingual, I think, and as journalists of color, we're often asked to sit on diversity committees or be translators for our newsrooms. And I know a lot of Latinos who have experienced that. Sometimes that can be a good thing. It's gotten me some wonderful opportunities. Sometimes it can be a burden. How do you sort of navigate that space, Esmeralda?
I'm still trying to learn how to navigate that space, because I feel that, you know, while my primary job at the LA Times is to storytell and to spend time, you know, creating space for Latinos, I also, because I see, you know, this incredible absence at our paper, I feel this tremendous weight and pressure to, one, mentor, to be active in our local community colleges, high schools, talking to Latinos, to be creating some sort of a pipeline for Latinos to get hired at the paper, to be networking with different organizations, to create partnerships with our paper, because we need more Latinos. And so it's like, you know, when I talk to my editor, I'm always presenting this menu of like 5 different categories for which I have to do work for the LA Times today. 4 of those categories, I don't get paid for that work.
I was just going to say, I hope they're giving you a check for all the extra work.
Well, that's a whole nother story. But
well, you'll have to update us on what ends up happening after you all meet with the top brass there. Good luck. Esmeralda Bermudez is a staff writer at the Los Angeles Times. Francis Negron Muntaner is a professor at Columbia University. And Graciela Mochovsky is the executive director of the Center for Community Media at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism.